life without hope. Now that's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It means hope.
Welcome to the Victims and Villains podcast. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak. I'm so glad that you guys decided to hit play. Please help me in welcoming from the superhero movie cast, Mr. Thomas Olson.
Hey, what's up, Josh? Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure, man. I always love having you on here. And so we're talking about the two Hellboy animated films. We are trying to produce some somewhat unconventional Hellboy content in anticipation for the upcoming film with David Harbour.
Nice, yeah. And I'm glad that you asked me to do this because I had never seen these movies until just recently. So excited to talk about them with you.
Yeah, me neither. And like, I had always kind of seen about these, I'd always kind of heard about them, but I'd never actually committed to sitting down and watching them. And like I'd said on our Seed of Destruction episode, like, I'm just starting to kind of get into the Hellboy fan base more than just kind of the two Guillermo del Toro films. The comics that I've been exploring, I've just loved immensely every time. And it's just such a weird and unique mythology to really dig into.
Yeah, I'm pretty brand new to the series as well. Just in general, I had never seen the movies until about a month or so ago. I did them, covered them over on my show, and mostly in anticipation for the new one. I figured it's about time I check them out. So yeah, it's been cool to open this new world up and explore it. It's something I haven't ever, you know, spent a lot of time with yet. So
we're talking about Hellboy animated for this episode, and we are talking about the two straight to video films, Sword of Storms and Blood and Iron. Believe it or not, there was actually these are interesting films because not only did the original, like, core of the live action film return to voice their characters, but also in this one you also have Mike Mignola and Guillermo del Toro also serving as producers. So it almost kind of, these films almost kind of feel like a continuation of the del Toro era films and set like very beautifully in between both Hellboy and Hellboy 2.
I was actually wondering, that is that been confirmed ever that these were in the universe, or is it just kind of
I don't know, because, like, I would say that, like, personally speaking, and I have nothing to go on, like, this is just my speculation, I think that they would be set. It would make sense that they're set in the same universe because you have, basically, it is the same cast. You have the creator, the director, and I believe these films. For these films, but you also at the same time, and they're also kind of set in between the world. So I would think maybe, but there's nothing to like really set in stone that yes, this is 100% confirmed.
Right. Yeah, they're both standalone stories, so you could definitely get away with it not, or I mean, with it being set, or if you wanted to say it isn't, but.
And as I've been reading into the comic book mythology, like, it's really almost kind of the same take, because Hellboys basically are these standalone like mini series or like short graphic novels, but at the same time they also kind of like harken back to like other previous calls. So like when we did Seed of Destruction, there is a couple other ones, like The Chained Coffin is like a short story, but it harkens back to a lot of the things that go on in Seed of Destruction, like Wake of the Devils, the same way, to where it almost kind of feels like a sequel to those film to that series. So that's almost kind of been the way that a lot of Hellboy has really worked and progressed himself as a character, to where they kind of feel like standalones, but yet they're almost a continuation of the mythology.
Yeah, I was thinking it kind of reminds me of James Bond a bit. How at least the pre-Daniel Craig era, it was always kind of standalones, but loosely connected. You could argue that they're still connected or that they're not. So that's kind of cool. I mean, that's kind of a different take on a lot of comic book type material, where it's usually more serialized. This is more, here's a standalone story that kind of works in and of itself, but you could also still, I mean, even the movies are pretty standalone, but there are a few threads that cross over. But overall, you could watch the one, and then you could watch two without having seen one, and vice versa. So,
yeah. So this film, there was supposed to be a third film in this series, but it was never actually greenlit. Same to the live-action films, they had always been kind of continuously planning a third film in the live-action Del Toro. So it was supposed to be a trilogy, and it just kind of never happened. They went with a reboot instead, and you can kind of see like the seeds of where they were going in the second film. This series also at the same time spun off not one but three Dark Horse volumes that are set within this universe. So if you guys want to like these films, you guys can also go check out Dark Horse released a couple graphic novels, The Black Wedding, Judgment Bell, and The Men Argyra. So there are three films that are set within the universe of these films.
Nice. Yeah, I need to read some of those. I haven't picked up any of the comics yet, so definitely excited to explore this character in this world a little bit more.
And fun fact, and then we'll kind of start digging into this. Are you a fan of the DC animated movies?
Me? Yeah. Oh yeah, I love those for the most part.
So the gentleman that did the music, the score for these two films, also has a very big hand in composing for some of DC's animated most notable films, including Batman Superman, Public Enemies, Crisis on Infinite Earths, or Crisis on Two Earths, Batman Under the Red Hood, All-Star Superman, Green Lantern, Emerald Knights, Batman Year One, Justice League Doom, and Batman The Dark Knight Returns. He has also, at the same time, scored both Injustice video games and Batman Arkham Origins, and this gentleman's name is Christopher Drake.
I noticed that he wrote the score for Under the Red Hood. I knew that. I didn't realize he had done all those other ones. That's cool, though. Yeah. I for the most part really enjoy almost all of those DC animated films. So that's cool. Making a name for himself in these movies.
It gives you a sense of kind of like awesomeness, because like Mangola kind of got his start with like DC comics. Like, and again, knowing very little, I think when we had Rob from Ghost of the Stratosphere on, he talked about how Mangola had done like a DC like Doomsday comic, but he also did Batman Gotham by Gaslight as well. It was Batman versus Jack, and it's a fantastic book if you guys have never read it. So I think it's almost kind of poetic that you're getting a guy that started out doing DC comics also doing scores for these Dark Horse animations as well.
Yeah, no, it's way cool. And he's got a very unique way of drawing his characters, not just Hellboy, but yeah, even Batman. You can going back and seeing it now after being more familiar with Hellboy, I can see different I can see his art. And so he also drew, this is according to Wikipedia, but it says he drew the art for or the covers for Batman Death in the Family, which is a very iconic image of the Batman series of, you know, Batman carrying the dead Robin. But yeah, so that's another big Batman story. Looks like he was a part in as well.
All right, so we are getting ready to unpack both of these films. Well, we're going to do so right after this commercial break. But if you guys are listening to this right now, you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 129 suicides that take place each and every day. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can reach out to us on any of our social media. You guys can call the Suicide Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. You can text anonymously to 741-741 or go to victimsandvillains.net/hope, where you guys can find even more resources to get connected with counselors, churches, and more. All of that is in the links for this show notes wherever you guys are listening to this podcast. If you guys need those resources, they are in the show notes for this episode. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
All right, guys. Hey, this is John from Three Rivers Comic Con and New Dimension Comics. We just moved our store to the waterfront, as well as Three Rivers Comic Con. It will be down in the old Macy's building, right under the bridge, in Homestead at the waterfront, right behind Permane's and Dave & Buster's. We have everybody from Pat Olive and Ron Frenz and Russ Braun and Mike Golden and tons more artists coming. About 110 artists coming. A bunch of vendors, some publishers, Valiant, Aftershock, Action Lab, Black Box, SourcePoint Press, they're all going to be there. We have cosplay, we have creators, writers, artists, everything you can think of. It's May 11th and 12th, which is Mother's Day weekend. Come on down, hang out. Tickets start at just $10. You can buy them at your local New Dimension Comics and save on service fees. And don't forget, we make our own beer for the convention, and it is a Russian Imperial Stout with coffee. And it's made by Shoebrew from Zelianople. And Josh Blaylock, creator of Mercy Sparks, is doing the beer label. He will be there all weekend. And you can get your can of the beer by getting your VIP package for the Mercy Sparks Sinful Stout. See you May 11th and 12th.
Welcome back. We're getting ready to open up a can of spoiler alert because we're talking about Hellboy Animated, both Sword of Storms and Blood and Iron. But I'm going to pass it over to you. This is the first time that both of us have explored this film. What did you think of Sword of Storms?
It was a lot different than I was anticipating going into it. I enjoyed it. I really had no idea what the story was going to be. I didn't realize it was going to involve like this samurai aspects and Japanese culture, things like that. So that was kind of a really cool. I always enjoy stories that explore that, and so that was a lot of fun. But I enjoyed it. I didn't. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I think I had a good time with it. I think it's fun to see different. I like to see stories explored in different mediums. So having just watched the live action movies, it was fun to be able to go and see this on like a smaller scale in animation as well. And it's like you said earlier, they have the returning cast. You know, they've got Ron Perlman back. Which, you know, it's like that voice now of Hellboy is pretty much synonymous with the character, his voice. And so I think I've seen the trailers for the David Harbour, and I think he'll do well. But so far, I'm pretty attached to Ron Perlman, just kind of like how for me, Kevin Conroy, when I read Batman, that's the voice I hear in comics. So, I did like it. I think I liked the... second one, Blood and Iron, a little bit more. That one was a bit more interesting, I thought. But this was still a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, I agree that I liked this one, but didn't necessarily love it. Like, there are aspects of it that were really cool to explore. And that's something that I think the live-action Hellboy kind of missed out on is, like, when you start digging into the comics, like, there's this very much... international appeal of that character, and this one definitely got to explore that. And one thing that we had talked about on Seed of Destruction is that one thing that Magola does really well with the aspect of creating these characters and writing this mythology is that he takes different cultural mythologies and then weaves them into his own to make them like a part of his lore. And I really like that aspect because it helps you stand out, and exploring the different Japanese mythologies and legends and like lore really welcomes that aspect of the comics into this medium. And I think it works really well for this medium, but it's something that I respect about it. And but as a whole, I kind of feel like this film, my two biggest problems with this film is that it is super busy. Yeah. And the animation style, I was not a fan of the animation. I liked the animation style for the second one. It's this almost the same exact one, but I felt like this film, given a lot of its subject matter, it was like, it's like really bright. And I don't know. It would be like watching like a violent, like animated murder in these like really bright after school colors that I just kind of don't feel like it matched the tone. Does that make sense?
Oh no, totally. I thought the exact same thing with the animation. And I even felt that with the second one. The second one definitely darkens it a bit, the colors, but I still felt that. I mean, it reminded me of like, I don't know, like when I was a kid and I turned on some random Saturday morning cartoon and it was a, you know, like, it was fine enough to entertain me, but I didn't really care about the cartoon as much. Nothing stood out to me. So, the quality definitely doesn't seem as strong as the rest of, like, the production that they went into it. You know, whether that was, like, the voice acting, the story, whatever. The animation kind of doesn't match that level. And maybe I'm guessing they probably had a really small budget and they're paying for bigger name actors to voice these characters. So something's got to give a bit, but it did feel a little bit, like you said, a little bit light that didn't quite match what the tone of the story was trying to portray.
And it's funny because, like, when you talk about like that Saturday morning cartoons, and there's this level of basically like what I was texting you as I was watching, and it was kind of like, it reminded me of like Static Shock, or if a lot of people like grew up in like the early 2000s, like Braceface or like Sabrina the Teenage Witch, I think is also like another a couple other cartoons worth mentioning, where it's like, it's not quite these like high caliber cartoons of like, say, like Batman the Animated Series, or, you know, Justice League, where you have these like really rich colors that stand the test of time. That, you know, I go back and watch the Batman the Animated Series, like the original, not the remastered, and I can still get lost in the animation because it's so rich and so deep. Whereas this one, the animation, I felt like just kind of falls flat, and it's a forgettable aspect of the film. And right. It's I don't know, like did you kind of see like those influences of like Static Shock, where it's like that really bright colors and
I mean, I don't think I would have noticed had you not pointed out, but yeah, now like pointing it out, it's like I can totally see that. You know, and the thing is, like, you look at like the DC animated movies, kind of mentioned before, and they don't have perfect animation. You know, there's some that are better than others, but they usually are always a bit, you know, they put a little bit more effort into it, or maybe they have more budget. So I guess I was expecting a little bit more of that. And it did feel like, okay, this looks like it could be set in the Static Shock universe, which is, that's set in the Justice League Batman Animated Series universe, isn't it?
Yeah, they kind of confirmed it later, because like originally when it was brought out, like it wasn't, but when they went to, when the Justice League, the animated series went to the future, they had brought Static Shock into that universe, and then basically had canonized it. So
right.
At first it wasn't, but now it is.
Okay. Yeah, I remember I didn't watch a ton of Static Shock, but from what I remember there was some crossovers and stuff at some point, but
yeah, and I don't know, like animation aside, I feel like it's got a really strong this first film has a really strong center to it, to kind of the arc. Like I think it's strongest when it's focusing on Hellboy. Like I said, like there's a lot of like busy nature about it, where you have the BPRD, I have to say that really slow.
Yeah.
Agent and the medium as they're kind of like trying to like figure out where Hellboy is, and then you have the arc with, you know, Liz and Abe trying to figure out where Hellboy is, and like those arcs kind of don't ever really get resolved at the end. Like I think that was kind of my biggest problem with this film, is that those things they try to set them up for purpose, and then they quietly just kind of die down at the end. But I loved the aspect of Hellboy kind of going through this like spiritualized version of Japan, to where they're getting to explore the mythos, but you're kind of getting to explore it with someone that's never experienced it before. I thought that was a really interesting take, and Hellboy is kind of like the perfect medium to tell those mythos to a modern audience.
Yeah, no, that's definitely probably my favorite thing about this too. Like you said, the Hellboy series does these cool things where it takes, you know, myths from different cultures or different aspects of a culture and explores it a little bit more, puts its own twist on it. And not being totally familiar with these, Japanese culture, like I mentioned before, I've always enjoyed stories where they explore that. So that was definitely my favorite part as well. And I agree. I think maybe streamlining this a little bit, having them all kind of either be together, or at least maybe only having two storylines going on at once, maybe would have helped streamline the story a bit. But as far as like Hellboy's part in it, yeah, it was a lot of fun to see, and it was really interesting exploring this world with through his eyes, which it kind of reminded me of Hellboy 2, the Golden Army, of when he kind of is opened up to this like underground world of like the trolls and different stuff. And so it was a cool, well, I guess this movie came out before that, but kind of a cool nod to that, or what was to come with that film, seeing this new mythical world explored through the eyes of Hellboy.
Yeah, and I think it might be Static Shock, but there's an episode of like one of the earlier animated series from DC where, and I'm so sorry to kind of like harken back so much, listeners, to DC Comics, but there's where you have Thunder and Lightning, and like one of them like doesn't want the power, but one of them does, and it's like this interesting dynamic. I don't know, like even thinking about it now, like that's what I kind of keep thinking of, where it's kind of like goofy, and you're spending like the entirety of this film trying to like recapture Thunder and Lightning, these two Japanese like spirit demigods, who I don't know if that's the right terminology or not, but we're gonna go with demigods.
Yeah, I think that works.
to kind of like capture them back into, and then like kind of like bring peace to the, like I enjoyed that aspect of it. I thought it was a nice touch, but I don't know, kind of like Thunder and Lightning, they hyped him up for the entirety of the film, and then like I just kind of felt like it was a bit anticlimactic for that last battle.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It seemed like there were going to be these, you know, like just a big deal, and then it kind of felt a little flat for me as well. But I think the journey getting there was still fun enough, so I can maybe forgive it a little bit. But yeah, I did feel like a bit, bit of a letdown as it unfolded there at the end. I felt like I did get a little bit lost in kind of trying to stay up with everything. Like I feel like I need a little bit more time to flush out some of the mythology and everything. So that would be another complaint I guess I'd have with this film as well. And it was because I enjoyed what I was getting, and I would like to have seen a little bit more.
Yeah, I think you could have done that had you not kind of had this attention on some of these side stories with the agents and then Liz and Abe. And I agree. I think that the journey to kind of get to the climax is part of one of the best portions of this film, getting to explore the different aspects of the mythology and this culture. And also they also do a really good job at not only kind of presenting these antagonistic challenges for Hellboy to overcome to get to the next portion of his journey, but they also kind of do really well at really giving you backstory with the Thunder and Lightning characters. I think that was actually some of the when they were exploring the backstory of Thunder and Lightning, I think that there was a different art style that was very kind of it was very like Japanese, like what you would expect from like an Americanized Japanese, you know, folklore, kind of like in the beginning, very similar to, I would kind of compare it to Mulan, the way that they kind of gave backstories. I really thought the animation for that really stood out. It's one of my favorite sequences within this film. It's so, so beautiful to get to look at. And then, you know, you get back to the original, but that sequence, what did you think of that one?
No, I agree. I think that was a pretty strong part of the movie. I hadn't thought about like what you mentioned about kind of that being similar to like something like Mulan, but that totally, as you said, I was like, yeah, totally. That totally makes sense. I enjoyed it. I think, like I said, that's to me where this movie really was, had all like the strong parts when it was exploring this culture, this other aspect of it, because it felt different. It felt very unique, especially separating itself a lot from the other Hellboy stories that I know. And I watched Blood and Iron first. I actually watched them in different orders. So went from that one, which is, I feel like a very different story compared to this. And so that, you know, that made this one stand out a little bit more so, and really enjoyed it. And I think too, the stuff with like the Lord's daughter, I'm trying to remember if she had a name.
I know what you're talking about, and like that kind of like that arc, I think was like it's not in the film a whole lot, but it's one of those things that is beautifully done, like when it kind of like wraps up, that you kind of understand, because like there's a lot of like older, I guess I don't know too much about Japanese culture, so like I don't know if this is like still a conduct, but it's that theme of, you know, basically like really being like really traditional. It kind of was like the queen was kind of like, or the princess was kind of going against tradition. She was following her heart. It was a beautiful love story, but like her father didn't really kind of like approve of it. And so again, it kind of brings that Mulan that Mulan reference or influence back to the film.
Right. And I liked how it kind of like ended with her kind of finally being able to break the cycle of like the, you know, not being able to kind of just pass on, but eventually like her and having like that gratitude towards Hellboy. And that's what's cool about Hellboy's story, is like, I feel like he meets these like lost, tormented creatures along the way, because that's kind of what he is a bit too. He doesn't fit in. He's, you know, he's supposed to be living this world of like humans, but he's was created for something else. His destiny was something else, but he's had to make choices, and he's always having to kind of make that choice again to still fight for mankind, humans. And so he meets these other creatures, these other people, these beings that he can relate to, and then having, you know, but like he's always, as much as like Hellboy is kind of this like kind of guarded and rough and kind of character. He's always out like doing things to help other people, and he has a really, you know, he has a really big heart, even though he wouldn't always like admit to that. And that's always fun to see as well. And that was a really strong part of this film for me, to see that part, see that like his character go to those lengths again to help other people.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that he is kind of that. That's one of the most interesting aspects of his like arc as a character, not only in these films, but also in like his mythology. Like I said, in the Seed of Destruction episode, like I think one of the strongest factors within his story is there's a short story called The Chained Coffin, where he kind of basically goes back and he's looking for like who he is. And I just really enjoy that aspect of his character. I think that it's one of his like strongest like suits, and kind of like being able to relate to his character in that aspect. I think that it does a really, really good job at doing that with this film, especially because I think that we're all looking for peace. I think that there's a lot of us that don't go out of our way to kind of create animosity. So, you know, whatever the factor, we just want peace. And I think that the story of the Japanese princess within this arc, I think, does a really good job at demonstrating, you know, peace is obtainable. It's sometimes a long journey to get there.
Yeah, no, totally. And it's, I love that, because it's this Hellboy character is fun. He fights cool monsters and does these crazy, goes to these crazy extremes and experiences these weird, fun journeys. But at the end of the day, that's kind of what it's about for him, is helping other people find some sort of peace in the world. And so I think, though, what's interesting too is like, you know, you think about like Hellboy's like life purpose or whatever, or what he was destined to become. He was really destined to become the opposite end of that. And it's cool to see him find some satisfaction in being able to help other people and be someone that can, you know, help another person find a resolution to some sort of conflict in their life. Like I feel like he did here with this princess. And so that's a really cool aspect of this character. Obviously, like all superheroes, that's kind of what they do, is try to help and make other people's lives better by destroying some sort of evil. And but I think Hellboy's, I don't know, his feels for some reason a little bit more personal sometimes than a lot of other superheroes, and that's kind of a cool touch that I don't feel like you get as much from other characters.
No, completely agree. And so if we're talking about, like, what would you rate this film on a scale 1 to 5?
I'd probably give it a 3 out of 5. I mean, like I said, I enjoyed it. I had a good time with it. Didn't totally like knock my socks off. The animation maybe knocks it down a little bit. Little chaotic, little messy at times, but overall, it's still enjoyable. Like I would, you know, I'd go back and watch it again at some point. I'm not necessarily rushing to go watch it, but I would. But I wouldn't be, you know, there's some movies, I don't know if you, I'm sure you experienced that, you watch it and you're like, that was good, but I don't think I ever need to watch it again.
Yeah.
And this was good, and I would watch it again. I'm not going to, like I said, go tomorrow and watch it, but I'm going to, it was one that I had a good time, and I had a good time talking about it, had a good time watching it. So yeah, I'd give it a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm also going to go with a 3 out of 5. I think it's got this like beautiful take on the character. It has a really strong plot, really strong direction, fantastic voice casting as well. I think bringing the original live action crew to the animation was a good move, and I think it handles the lore of Japanese culture really well, but it does have its problems. Like the animation brings it down for me. There's like so much going on at some times that it feels crowded. And like you said, like it's still a decent movie, and it is very much in the vein. Like if this was something that was like on, like I would like maybe like watch it, but it's not something that like I'm dying to go out and watch again.
Right. Yeah. Like that's totally where I landed with it as well. So.
All right. Well, we're going to take another commercial break. When we get back, we're also going to be talking about the second film in the animated mythos, Blood and Iron. We'll be right back.
From the galactic depths of the comic book universe comes the Ghosts of the Stratosphere, ready to galvanize and energize your mind with the latest of comic book news and reviews. And why are you stopping me? Yes, that's much better. Hi, this is Andy Larson for Ghosts of the Stratosphere. Join me every week, along with my co-hosts, Rob Stewart and Chad Smith, as well as a cavalcade of fantastic comic book guests, as we dish out heaping helpings of the greatest and latest of comic book news and reviews. New shows posted every Tuesday, with bonus shows every first Friday of the month. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher under Ghosts of the Stratosphere, as well as on our website, www.gotstratosphere.com. Hope to see you soon, folks.
All right, welcome back. We're talking about Blood and Iron. This is the second film, the 2007 straight-to-video release of Hellboy Animated. And you had alluded to it already, and I think we're kind of on the same page. This is definitely a stronger film of the two.
Yeah, I definitely like this one. Excuse me, a lot more. I think the like we talked about the well, the animation still isn't like that great as far as I know the overall animation. I feel like at least they toned the colors down to match the tone, and that helps a lot too. But I think what I really liked was the I don't know there's a lot of stuff I liked. The mystery was really kind of interesting. It was kind of but it like did it in a weird way where you know you get these flashbacks. And we're going spoilers, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So there is we get these flashbacks of this vampire and like so we see her kind of defeated, but then also like you see this whole backstory of how there's this like priest and this other woman that he basically like tells her, oh, it's okay, you're gonna be fine, and then she ends up dying. Anyway, it was really interesting. Then you've got the haunted house type aspect where you got Hellboy and the crew over there trying to like investigate this house, and it's like this haunted house, and they're like putting these mysteries together as they go along. It was just I don't know, it was just a lot of fun. And then the really kind of fast I don't know, like the discussions they have around faith in this movie was really fascinating to me. And I was really surprised then to see them kind of going that deep in like an animated movie like this. And we can talk more details about that bit, but overall, yeah, those are some of the things I really enjoyed about this one.
And I think too, that like a lot of the issues that I had with the first film were kind of like the side stories, especially the Liz and the Abe character. I feel like they're better executed in this film. I think that in the first live action film, like Selma Blair's version of Liz is like very like contained, very, you know, not very confident, and they open that up within Golden Army, and you open that up about like kind of like that sarcastic nature of the character and just really give her purpose. And this one, she's really, really well executed. I can't emphasize that enough. There's a sequence where they're like in the cave, and like she basically like lights these like creatures on fire, which was awesome to kind of see. But they also at the same time, like this one is a film that I feel like uses its characters a lot better, even with the, you know, the Ron Paulson human lie detector. I felt like even like as a, you know, kind of like a side character, like he still even had purpose in this. I feel like the pacing of this film definitely is a lot more better executed. And there's a lot like the animation style for this one, like it's a lot more it's still the same, but it feels like that they're kind of like doing a little bit more like darker gothic tones with some of the colored palettes, and that's the way that Hellboy should have been. It's not necessarily the animation style in the first film that really bothered me. It was more or less the color palette that came with the animation style.
Right, and so I recently watched the Gotham by Gaslight movie, which I had never read the comic before, so that was my first introduction to it, and I kind of got a similar vibe as far as like its tone and animation with that I did in this movie. Obviously, the Eastern Europe part of it would probably help because it's kind of a similar style there, but I really enjoyed that. That's kind of a cool, I don't know, it's a cool like time period, and it's a you don't see it a lot in a ton of stories. I guess you get a lot of like Dracula type stories, but this one was a different type of vampire story. Because a lot of times when I hear vampires, it's not always my favorite thing, but this was really, I really love this story. I thought the villain was also really interesting. And I mentioned earlier, there's this scene where she's talking to, I think it was the priest. And she's basically telling him, like, your faith is useless because I have all the power. I can do all these crazy things and your God won't do anything for you. And to me, I found that to be very relatable as far as, like, different temptations that as human beings we experience to, like, you know, whatever our faith is, whether that is a faith in some sort of, like, a God or Christianity or not, I think I found that to be really relatable of, like, the opposite of that is usually this like really kind of dazzling, temptatious thing. We're like, oh, if I go this other way, I'm going to have all this power. I'm going to have all this, you know, I can get whatever I want. Whereas like sometimes sticking to our faith requires sacrifice, and it's a lot harder work, and it doesn't always seem like it's going to pay off. But in the long run, it's really the thing that's going to help bring us more satisfaction in the long run, if that makes sense. Yeah. And it was kind of cool with her tempting him and having this sequence of that. And it was like the things she was saying, I was like, yeah, that does sound really good. I found myself like, yeah, let's go follow her. And that's this battle, I think, of faith that I think a lot of us have to go through in our lives, whatever that looks like for every individual. But the terminology she was using, the words, everything was really relatable, and I loved that about this movie.
Yeah, I think too that like when you're talking about that battle of morals, like I think too it's like, you know, yes, it's a battle of faith, but I think it boils down to like this battle of morals, to where like when you're in those like valley top moments, like sometimes you can. You have opportunities that kind of present itself to maybe shortcut or to get to those mountaintop moments. And I think that, you know, who can't be there where you have those temptations of, you know, if I take this shortcut, or if I tell this lie, or if I, you know, if I bend my morals just a little bit, this will all be over. And like you were saying, like there's those valley moments, I think, are what make us stronger, and there's always a purpose for the pain. And you know, one of the, like, speaking from someone that has gone through depression, speaking through someone that has thought about suicide and has gone through self-harm and that has battled addiction, like everything that our show is created to stand against, like I'm telling you that those moments within my life, like those are hard seasons to go through, but they're seasons that like I wouldn't trade for the world, because they have shaped me to be the person that I am today, and to be the very bold and sometimes blunt person that I am today. I am because of it.
No, yeah, I love that. And I think, yeah, going along with your theme of the show of like trying, you know, suicide prevention and mental health awareness, I think it's easy sometimes to, or it seems like it's the easier path to to sometimes give up and stop fighting against the things that are difficult in their lives. That seems like it's going to be the thing that's going to help. But as we push through and persevere, you know, that's really where we can start to see more positive results in our lives. And so, anyway, that conversation just kind of, I think there's a lot of ways you can interpret it. And obviously we've talked about a lot of different ways to interpret that. And I think that's what's really cool about this film is that obviously it's this fun mystery, this like horror adventure film as well, but it's also got some deep stuff that I wasn't totally expecting from this movie.
Yeah, I think that's one of the strongest factors about this movie is just kind of it's not what you expect. And I've found that a lot about kind of the Hellboy mythology is that when I think it's going to go one way, it ends up going a complete different way. And this is a weird film to describe because like in one vein, like it's a vampire movie, but in the same vein, like it's a very like sorceress kind of film as well. Cause like they battle Hecate, who was the goddess of magic, witchcraft, the night, the moon, ghosts, and necromancy. She was the only child of Titanus, Primus, Persis, and Asteria. If I have any Greek listeners, I am so sorry.
Hey, you do better than I would. So.
She's given power over heaven, earth, and the sea. So she's given this like big domain of, you know, just magic and witchcraft and just like all of these like spooky things. And like I think that while you have these kind of like dual arcs of both vampires and Hecate, like I think that they marry and they merge really nicely. And also on top of that, I think that the Hecate versus Hellboy battle in the end of the film is amazing.
Yeah, it's super good. That was definitely a big highlight for me too, especially, and I wasn't necessarily expecting this like big battle throwdown. Like I thought maybe it lasts for like 2 minutes, but it's a decent battle that lasts for a good, you know, good chunk of time. And they really, you know, build to it and give you a really satisfying confrontation between the two of them. Another thing, it's like that. I like the two, how she's kind of like, basically like, why are you not embracing the darkness or the evil inside of you? Like, why would you ever choose a life of, you know, like fighting against these things, like fighting against our natural, in, you know, carnal desires to rule and to oppress and to, and all these, you know, evil things. And that's another thing I like about this character is he has all that in him. And as human beings, we have that in us as well, but he has it, you know, it's expounded because he's a demon. And it's kind of, I like how she's challenging him on that. Like, why don't you just join me rather than trying to fight me and let's rule this world and cause chaos and destruction. But it's, you know, he every day has to make that choice. Like, no, that's not the kind of life I'm going to live. And I loved like the very last shot of the movie of how it's him waking up in the bed next to his dad. And it just is like really a simple way to end the movie, but it's just like, for me, it's like that's Hellboy's kind of rock and foundation of his morals and where everything he stands by is that, you know, he learned from his dad to like stick up, like we talked about before, stick up for the underdog, help those that, you know, can't help themselves sometimes, and be there to support the people and to save, you know, use your abilities to help others, to save those that need saving. And so and it kind of comes all the way back to what his dad has taught him and how he's raised him to be. And that was really cool. I think it's really important that we have mentors and figures, people in our life to help us, to remind us of who we are and why these things are important when we are faced with challenges. And so, so not only is it just a cool battle sequence and fight sequence, it's just, I think there's a lot to it as well, as far as like Hellboy's making that decision every day to not give in to the evil that's inside of him.
Yeah, because like the whole thing about Hellboy is that it's been prophesied in a lot of the mythology. It was even supposed to be the theme of the third film, to where he basically was in the 40s. He was brought to Earth, resurrected from hell by the Nazis to be this like world destroyer. And because of the relationship with Professor Broom, it has really helped him to really come against that evil and really embrace that good. And I think that, you know, again, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Like, there are moments where, like, sometimes the harder way of approaching things, like, it's not the right way, and like the right way isn't always going to be the easy way, but it's always about remembering who you are. And I'm so glad that you kind of brought up like the subject of like mentor and like community, because, you know, when you're talking about those types of things, it makes it worth it in the end, because, you know, one thing that we've constantly talked about on the show is like the need for community, to surround yourself with positivity, surround yourself with people that, you know, are going to call you out. And like, I'm so grateful for like friends like Brandon, who's one of our staff writers. He's been featured on a couple of our episodes this year. Jacob, who's going to be a part of Hope Station. He was on our Venom episode. And most of all, like, my wife. Like, I'm so thankful for those people that know me intimately but aren't afraid to be like, bro, come on, like, this isn't who you are, like, come on, do something.
Right. No, totally. Yeah, it's so important to have people that are going to be able to know us, but also can help kind of push us in the direction when we need to. I think too, one thing that was interesting was there's that sequence when the priest basically like tells this girl like, hey, you can go to your fitting for your wedding or whatever. You know, the church is going to protect you. Nothing like that's going to happen in our town. Kind of a little bit of having a little bit, being a little bit naive to that. And then obviously something does happen and she's killed. And it's like, you meet this guy later and he's still dealing with the guilt over that choice to, like, you know, have confidence that this girl could go out and be safe. That was kind of that was another character I really found interesting, and his kind of story as well of like, and I liked how Professor Broom, you know, cause this character ends up dying and he ends up, I think he gives him back like his, cross. And then there's that scene at the end when you see all the different spirits kind of finally be able to move on, and he's one of them. And it's cool to finally see him still have peace with, you know, and, you know, he made kind of a wrong decision by giving this girl not the best advice, but that didn't make him like a terrible person. And it was cool to finally kind of see him have some sort of peace, being able to move on, you know, in the afterlife.
Yeah. And again, I think that this film is one of the, like you're saying, like, it's very deep and it's very complex, and it does a really good job, I think, at, it's not as like loud as the last film, more subtle within this film as well. And so, I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give this film?
1 to 10?
Or sorry, 1 to 5.
Okay. Man, that's hard. Probably a 3.5. I know that a half might not, like, I did like this one a lot more than the first one. That might not seem like a huge jump. But it kind of, I don't know. A lot of the aspects we talked about, it definitely shot it up. I think, like I said, the animation still isn't that great. It fixes a little bit with like how you mentioned, like the tone and the dark in the colors a little bit. That helps. But yeah, you know, 3 out of 5. There was, I feel like, some parts that I think dragged a little bit for me, kind of maybe towards the beginning. But overall, yeah, it was a really, really enjoyed it, and it was a big step up from the first one. So, Yeah, 3 out of 5.
Yeah, like I can understand like that kind of like the dragging with it as well. I'm gonna go ahead and give this a 4. I felt like it was a lot stronger of a film. A lot of the complaints that I had before definitely got fixed with this one. Animation still not that great, and as much as I love him in other mediums, Ron Paulson I felt like was just every time that character would speak, it just kind of felt like out of like the, it took me out of the mood, because like I'm envisioning a lot of his like other characters, and most notably like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I think is kind of where it kind of got me. Like his voice is just like very specific that when you hear it, you can't help but, you know, just kind of be taken back to like other mediums. I feel like him and like if they ever did like a horror kind of like animated film, and it would be like the equivalent of like casting like Gilbert Gottfried in that role, like it would just kind of take me out of it. And so like that kind of really took me out of it. But I think that a lot of the themes, a lot of like the voice casting, it is definitely a much more well-rounded film, and it blends a lot of the mythologies together really well.
Yeah. Did you ever watch Star Wars Clone Wars? Have you watched that show at all?
I've watched aspects of it.
Okay. So the guy who voices Obi-Wan in that is James Arron Taylor, and he voices the young Professor Broom in it. And
that's right.
So I heard him, and I was like, that's Obi-Wan. So that kind of, not that it didn't really take me out, but I just was like, it was kind of cool to see that. So I want to just point that out, because I actually met James Arron Taylor at a Comic-Con a couple years ago, and he's just like such an awesome guy. And he's really great at his job too. But it was, I was able to point out his voice pretty quick. That I was like, "Hey, that's Obi-Wan's voice."
Yeah. So, Blood and Iron definitely the stronger of the two. Blood and Iron was actually a film that like I might watch again before the David Harbour movie, because I think that this one and Golden Army I liked a lot more better than their predecessors. So definitely stronger, and definitely excited for David Harbour to take the reins. Are you excited at all for it?
No, I totally am. If you would ask me a month ago, I probably wouldn't been. I'm like, oh, yeah, it looks okay. But like I said, I finally watched the Guillermo del Toro films it was about a month ago. And then having watched these films, and I've had a few different people recommend different Hellboy comics to me that I'm hoping to be able to pick up at some point. And so, yeah, I'm definitely really excited for the reboot. I think I would have liked to have seen Del Toro finish off his movies with a third one before getting a reboot. But, you know, in a perfect world, that's what I would have wanted. But it's not how it worked out. So I am really excited to see. And the latest trailer that just came out like maybe 2 weeks ago for it really kind of got me pumped. So I'm super excited for it.
Yeah, I have not actually watched that yet. So I'm like one of those guys that like I have been trying to avoid like second trailers to where like the little I know about it, like I'm okay with it. Like if you're gonna sell me, you have to sell me within the first trailer. And the first one I felt like just kind of like the first trailer for this film I felt like really sold me, like it's like light and goofy, but like apparently like this film's gonna be a lot darker, and that's like the second trailer really alludes to that apparently.
Yeah, and see for me, if it's a movie that I already know I'm gonna see, yeah, I don't need to see the second trailer. I usually will watch it, like Avengers Endgame I watched for that, but I was glad to watch the second one because I feel like for me it helped get me a little bit more pumped for it. So I'm really excited for it. I think we're what, less than a month away now, right? Second week of April it comes out. It's the week after Shazam.
Yeah
Which, so, are you seeing that this weekend? Are you going to?
Heck yes, I'm seeing it this weekend. We are recording on the 20th. This isn't gonna drop for probably till like the end of March. But yeah, we are, my wife and I, we got tickets to see it this Saturday right after a convention. So
sweet. Awesome. Yeah, I'm stoked for it.
All right. Well, where can people find more about your podcast?
So you can find us, on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, wherever, or pretty much most places you listen to your podcast, but it's called Superhero Movie Cast. You can find all of our episodes there. And then if you want to connect like outside of that, we have a Facebook page, Instagram page. I don't do a ton with the Instagram as much as I should, but Facebook page, you can find us there. Or you can always just email us at superheromoviecast@gmail.com.
All right. Well, if you guys are listening to this, you guys can find us everywhere: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, or Apple Podcasts, or wherever you guys get podcasts. Make sure that you guys hit the subscribe, like, and follow buttons. So that way, every time we publish hope-filled material, you guys are the first to hear about it. If you guys like what we stand for, you guys can consider signing below, signing up and supporting us on Patreon every month for as little as $2 a month. You guys can get your hands on exclusive content that will be exclusive to you guys, and you guys can also hit a one-time donation and pick up some cool swag from our Etsy page. And we're also doing our Hope Station 48-hour gaming stream April 12th through the 14th, so make sure that you guys stick around for that one as well. But that is actually going to do it. So until next time, please remember to keep talking nerd, talking hope, speaking nothing else. And if it's a vampire, stick it with a stake.